Okay.
So, as most of you know, this is Thanksgiving. You know, after this class, we don't have class on Thursday because it's Thanksgiving. Okay. This is a time to reflect on what you have to be thankful for in your life. And so, one of the things that I have to be thankful for is that we have guest lecturers today, and so I don't have to prepare a lecture. Okay, that's one thing. But we also have some good and appropriate guest lecturers. Our first speaker is Professor Ilya Vaxar from the Applied Math Department. And he is the author of a very well-known protein docking program, called GRAM. Okay? And that's basically, as we've been covering the last several classes, we've been talking about, this is sort of the last lecture, if you wish, in a unit on proteins. And so we're going to start out. He's basically going to talk about his protein docking program for a while. Then, when he's finished, we'll talk about, we have a bunch of students who talk about various protein databases and tools, okay, that are out there. And that will be sort of concluding our section on proteomics. And when we get back after Thanksgiving, the main thing we're going to look at is sort of evolutionary analysis, how do you do phylogenetic analysis, evolutionary data analysis, gets to some other problems. But so, okay, so I'd like to thank Ilya for coming. Okay,
well, thank you for having me. There are a lot of you here. I will be talking about our docking program and also about research projects which we do in our lab, which are based on this program. I understand you know already things about proteins, protein modeling, and protein docking, but I will give you some very short introduction into our take on protein docking in a couple of slides, because it has to do with the specific direction of our research. These are our coordinates. Structural genomics, why docking? From our perspective, docking plays a primary role. One of the central roles in structural genomics. Structural genomics starts with a sequence, you know, and then you may or may not, depending on your preferences, move to the structural aspect of information encoded in the sequence. So you get the protein structure. The protein structure itself is of little interest. What you need is the function of this protein, how it interacts with other objects in the living organism, and most of these other objects are other proteins. And that's where protein modeling and protein interactions come into play. Modeling protein interactions is what we call docking. Alright? That's why it's central core structural genomics from our perspective. And then if you want to move one step further and come to designing drugs, things support your industry, probably from a research perspective, then you can design a molecule which will modify the block or modify in another way the interaction between the proteins. That was the ideal theoretical case. The reality is that we have to find ways to match the proteins, which are not supposed to match each other because the structures are distorted. So since you know already about docking, the basics of it, which Dr. Skina taught you, So I may move on directly to the substance here and say that the primary interest of our group and future direction of structural genomics, for that matter, I think, is to learn how we can dock molecules which are inaccurate. There are several sources of this inaccuracy. The inaccuracy comes from the inaccuracy of the experimental data, of course. It also comes from natural causes in the natural
natural causes are the flexibility of the structure, which is an experimental source of the inaccuracy of experimental data. And of course, which is probably the most important for genome-wide studies, the inaccuracies come from the fact that these structures, the Y structure, the green structure, are not the experimental structures. I can talk about the genome-wide modeling, but they are products of modeling, protein modeling. Alright? And protein modeling nowadays is still not very accurate. This shows you the dynamics of the growth of the total number of pigeons known to humankind, okay? The red part is the known number of sequences. It's in the millions. And the blue part is the known number of experimental structures. Flat. Well, it's not flat. If you zoom in, you can see that it's expanding. Content of the pretty data bank grows expanding, but still, on the scale of millions of known proteins, it's nothing. So most of these, virtually all proteins, all the red part here, has to be modeled by computer algorithms. Alright? So the goal of structural genomics in the future, and also the present already, is to learn how to match protein structures on the genome scale. And these structures are not just structures, these are models of limited accuracy. Alright, so this is the paradigm of our research now lab, and focus of interest in the entire community for that matter. Approach to docking. How do we do the docking? Yeah, we know already about docking, but yeah, this is my take on that. You have two structures. And the first approximation you assume that they're rigid structures. So you have 6 degrees of freedom, 3 translations, 3 rotations. So how do you put them together? That's a big question. Now, people try different ways to do that. Manually, there are companies which produce rigid models of creating structures, which you in your hand and try to match these pieces of three-dimensional jigsaw. That's what
people try that. We try that in our group. No hope. In the general case,
when you don't know binding sites a priori, okay?
It's a really stupid question. I'm curious. Are there services that you can take your protein, your computer protein representation and form it out and say make me a physical model of this?
AutoCAD file.
How much does it cost to get such a physical model?
Well, it was done 10 years ago in our case, but these things have developed a lot, so I would assume the prices went down dramatically. At that time, it was still the price, I don't remember.
Nothing.
But it's not something out of this world. It's a reasonable price.
Writing molecular mechanics and molecular dynamics, natural thought, which come up with your brain, right? So it will work. Start that sentence.
So, surprisingly so, or not surprisingly so,
because members of college engineering can help the algorithms which are borrowed from
engineering, not explicitly based on physical chemical principles, although these principles are still embedded there. But that would be material here in the lecture. That works.
For example, algorithm, which was developed for strict space cram docking, surprisingly so. It's an interesting story from not so long past. Works perfectly for the docking. Not perfectly.
Reasonably well.
However, most successful and widespread application of algorithms for protein docking are algorithms which are borrowed from image recognition. All right, this is a picture. You can on the web, you can order a space photograph of the street corner and choose. This is my house. So it comes from military applications. The original algorithms. Space recognition or aerial photographs come from applications that people develop to distinguish between a tank and a plane. But these are two-dimensional images. So the technique was used in the past, which was predating our algorithms of cryptic recognition, where borrowed exactly from other applications. I don't know what happens to this nowadays, but we'll assume this was a further development than it was in the past. So what people were doing, they were taking two-dimensional images and massing them together to find complementary areas. And the technique which they used for that purpose was called correlation. Correlation by fast Fourier transformation. Well, correlation technique, I'll tell you in a minute or so what this means. It's just movement of one image, digitizing the images first, and then moving one image against the other image, calculating the product of the numbers which you have in the grids of your node, and summing them up, and ending up with a single number, which is the estimate of the complementarity of the shape you have in this two-dimensional picture. So the idea when we started it, probably a dozen years ago already, was how you apply previews. The first aim of that was you have to dissect previews and produce a bunch of two-dimensional images, and then you can do the correlation and find the complementary areas. Well, the problem is you can dissect your three-dimensional body in a multiplicity of ways, and then you have to sew them up somehow to produce the contiguous picture, and that's a pain, okay? You don't know how to do that. So, the bright suggestion was that instead of doing it in two dimension, as people used to do in the image recognition application, we'll have to do it in 3D. So this is a two-dimensional cross-section of three-dimensional actual, or not actual, illustrated with this three-dimensional grid. So what you do, you project your previews on the grid in 3D and include different numbers depending on where you are. You put zeros outside, you put, let's say, ones on the surface, and large negative numbers inside, some of that, right? So you can distinguish between the outside, surface, and the interior of the previews. And then you can do the same thing, but in 3D instead of 3D. Okay, so you don't have to do any slicing on the gradient structure. You just have to do correlation in 3 dimensions, and you can do it by a mathematical trick, the same trick, which is called fast Fourier transformation, which does very efficiently by convoluting the translational degrees of freedom in one operation, one integral operation. Alright? So again, the way it works is that these are actual models, which is trips. So this is a demonstration for it, but it's still the shape of the actual model. Right? If it's zero sphere, you put small pluses and numbers on the surface, and large things on the side. And then you do this correlation by fast Fourier transformation. And you end up with the number, which is numerically equivalent to the energy. I'm not going to go into details why it was so, which is interesting at the time. Numerically equivalent to the energy in standard atom-atom approximation of the intermolecular energy approximation between these molecules with a simplified stepwise potential. And the step is the grid step. Right? That's where the correlation is. Well, here's the one-dimensional example. You have the green function, blue function of correlation, of the overlap is the red thing, okay? So you move B against A and you multiply the values at each position of B, alright? So you end up with this function. This is a mathematical discrete, mathematical expression for the discrete correlation, which is continuous, alright? And that's the correlation function. So the maximum of the correlation function corresponds to the maximum overlap. So basically, if you're looking for the maximum overlap between the surfaces, you have to do this correlation and look for the peak in this correlation diagram. So you find the highest peak you saw from. So this is the actual function. Again, this is a two-dimensional cross-section through a three-dimensional picture, because the correlation for a three-dimensional case is a three-dimensional function itself. Alright, so, well, but still, this is a cross-section for the straight curves. We think you'll find this highest minimum for this function. Best match.
So this is aligning one slice against one slice.
No slices here. Exactly. So long. Projected on three-dimensional grid.
I see. So what are the two parameters then?
The two parameters are the shifts.
So you're not assuming any rotation here.
No, rotation is not exclusively. So for each rotation, you're going to use the whole thing. Okay? So beta and gamma are, think of it as x, y shifts. So here you have zeros, which corresponds to the case where these molecules are apart. The peaks correspond to their surfaces overlapping, right? And the interior, which is in fact is a deep crater that flows down, which is not shown here, at least negative values that you get when they are penetrating the surface, if you want to prevent them from penetrating.
And so in reality, this is not just a two-dimensional, but you also have a third dimension and you also have rotation.
Right, exactly. So it's a full, exhausting three-dimensional stuff. Six dimensions of on a grid. So we don't use any fancy algorithms for optimization. And search algorithms are search algorithms in exhaustive.
And computationally it's possible because of this trick of passive transformation.
And so it's a matter of the program RAM, which stands for Global Range of Recognition, which is the website that it's available from. And it's sort of popular these days, in fact. Standard issue and pre-computing docking. It's used in more than 3,000 laboratories, both in academic and industry places. We code itself, but there is a number of re-implementation of our algorithm in different codes and different groups. So, in fact, standard and pre-computing studies. It's sort of also used in small ligand receptor binding studies. And drug design kind of problems, but there we have a lot of competition because this is not specifically designed for small ligands. But in terms of pre-computing interactions, GRAM itself, GRAM-based algorithms, there's a number of them are sort of gold standard. So you have two structures on the top, and then you put them together with problems. This algorithm works perfectly well when you have two structure statements from a full crystal. Full crystal, and you separate the parts together and then dot them back. They match ideally because there's bodies of crystal. Now, the issue of full crystal is fine for validating your algorithm because it's of no use, of course, for practical purposes because you know full crystal already in the model. So these problems make sense for practical purposes is when you determine protein A and protein B separately. And when you determine it separately, even by experimentally, they will not match. Rarely they will match reasonably well. They will not match because of this loose fit thing. Okay? They will not match because of the size.
So what do we do? Well, our decision some years ago was
face this problem head on, okay? And this is the energy landscape. This is just basically the generalized coordinate here and the energy up here. Alright? So this is kinetic representation. If this is a real energy landscape,
I'm talking about the intermolecular energy now.
So the global minimum for the aggregate structure will be here, right? But then you have a conformational change in your psi chain somewhere at the interface, and your energy jumps up dramatically, okay? So even if you have an ideal optimizer taken from somewhere, we don't have it, of course, but assuming for the purposes of the argument that you have it, it will rightfully so find to the global minimum somewhere else, not even the lowest point, which is nothing to do with what you want, all right? So The idea was to smooth this landscape to the extent of filtering out these high frequency fluctuations and ending up with a smooth bedrock underlying landscape that is called funnel. Well, the funnel is a general concept now in creating modeling, including creating attractions, which tells you that if you ever manage a landscape and then you smooth it, the surface will not be flat. If it be flat, then creatures will have no time to adopt the conformation which you have in an experiment, or to find each other and therefore the confidence. In fact, the estimate is that the timeline of the universe is not enough for them to fully do what they have. So called levels of paradox. Right? So, but if you assume that there is a farm, so there is a trend in this underlying landscape which guides treatments to where they're supposed to be, then the times become realistic for creating forward and for creating done, comparable to those which observe the experiment. So, if you smooth again the landscape, then you reveal this funnel-like feature, and then you can find the lower minimum. That's the good news. You always find it if there's a lower minimum. Bad news is that you lose your precision. Precision of the original landscape is this. Precision of the smooth landscape will be the width of the funnel, which is larger. So, you do determine the minimum. Minimum very approximately, yes. No, it's an illustrative example. Obviously, it's a negative question. I should have said that. We don't know how to plot the real landscapes. We have a project where a guy attempts to do that. It's not obvious. But this is the real thing, okay? This is the real result. Real God, the illustration of the existence of this God. This is the original landscape. See, these are who created these in the correct God position. Now, the red blobs here are the positions of the center of mass of the other creation on the right. In the 100 lowest energy positions, right? So, samples
for these local minima.
Everywhere. So
these red dots
are everywhere. It's called a multiple minimum problem. And then you start smoothing the landscape. You smooth it. You end up in the correct place. In the correct place with the large leeway for fluctuations in position.
Well, that's from the energetic point of view,
and this is from the point of view of geometry. Think about gradients. This is a typical case of an enzyme inhibitor interaction, right? You have a large molecule in the energy pocket with a binding site of the inhibitor. So, when you smooth the fluctuations of the energy landscape, but geometrically it's a rule that you're smoothing the atomic resolution features of the surface. You smooth these larger and larger elements of your structure, your surface, okay? And you end up with the single predominant feature on the surface. So that single predominant feature is the use of the creatine enzyme and inhibitor removing the binding pocket. In terms of the case of a dimer, for example, it would be a flat, unusual flatness of their interface. That the large macrostructural feature should remain. Obviously, everything else, right? Smaller features. But of course, you need a computer. Computer, in the general case, which in the general case, almost every case, almost virtually every case. So that's why we have this big question.
All right. We estimated some time ago recently.
Out of all known gradients, how many pretty funnel for the low resolution creating new matches. And I'm talking about low resolution docking now. I'm talking about the flatness of the landscape. What we found is that approximately 52% of all creating complexes we can detect using GRAM, this low resolution match.
And again, what do you mean by this? If I give you protein A and protein B, you do your low resolution map, they're sort of roughly sticking together in the right place?
Right.
Half the time.
Yeah. Now, we claim that 48% is the case where we still have this feature which is not able to detect because the gram is not perfect. And because of different imperfectness of the database which we use, there's a lot of factors here, but in fact, it should be generally teachable.
All right, so our paradigm of docking is different from this one. It's that you start with original structures, then you dump them down, if I may say so,
make low resolution images of them, and then put them together in a good place. I think that'll transfer reality. Produce the reference position figures, exploring the confirmation possibility of the interface. Right? This stage is not finished yet. We don't know how to do the last, how to make the last step yet. Okay? But up to now, it's essential to develop the reference. So, this in fact, the last step is the crucial one. Not from the first approximation to end up with the structure.
In the vision literature, there's something called the skill space, where instead of using one estimation of smoothing, they are using multiple levels. So, for example, they're using Gaussian smoothing with different values of the user function. So, is that applicable in this sense?
Maybe, I don't know.
Because it sounds like you make the signal less and less blurred. So, you have something like a hierarchy.
That could be the case, but again, the problem here is not the way you smooth your surface, it's the way you take it to account the conformational changes. Because if you smooth the surface just as given, you will never match. Again, you will get this. Okay? So you have to do the smoothing and do something with the structures themselves, do the conformational search of the interface. So for that purpose, again, I'm not aware of this. So, again, from the illustrative perspective, consider this. This is the low resolution match, and the low resolution match in our case corresponds to a sparse grid representation. We're dealing with digitized images and molecules, and these images, if you take the grid, the large grid step, it will produce the low resolution image, right? So you start with the large grid step, and then you can go down, following a certain trajectory, you'll find your correct answer, and along your way, you can see that step with side chains. Other things which may help you, you have to take into account the physicochemical preferences, knowledge-based potentials all this mechanical preferences on the residue level and maybe the atom level. So some residues like each other more than other residues, so you may take this into account. And it may help you on this illustration for one of these words. And finally, what we're really pushing hard these days is to apply what we have already today in terms of these low resolution predictions for genome-wide studies of the databases. So assuming that you have human genome, so you know approximately plus minus 50,000 trees there, and you want to find out the structure of the complexes. So to do that, you have to predict the structures of those proteins which you can't predict, so we read cells in this matrix are the cases that you can predict by using a template, miles and miles of threading.
we do it by union scales. This matrix, of course, is symmetric. So, the three parts are those models which you can predict, and then you can predict, and then you can dot them together. So, you can dot 6, 2, find out the structure of the complex. And as you can see,
I lied to you. The green parts are not those
which you can predict. The green parts, green cells, are those interactions which exist. Okay? Not all predictions are correct, but all predictions. So, there is a network of interactions and predictions in the genome. So, in the literature, you can find information about the fact that 8 interacts with 2, okay? But does not interact with 3. So,
it's not known to interact with 3. Is it that it does interact with 3 or it's not known to interact with
3? Alright, so, and then
we predict there's functions and dot together, and the red squares are cases where we can find the structure of both of them.
So, as you can see, all green squares are covered by red squares, and these are the cases
which I'm going to tell you about. Where we don't have the model for one of the components because there are no templates for this component. So currently, as you may know, this course, approximately 30-40% of all predictions given the genome can be modeled. And approximately 13% of all predictions can be got.
So it's a pretty significant part of a genome, and this part grows, of course, very fast because more and more protein structures have become known and can be used as templates. So, well, basically, that's all I wanted to talk about.
We know about something like that docking interactions exist between the proteins, and then we had that 52% pie chart telling us that how grams forms. But isn't it also not a worthwhile question to ask that if there are false matches in the sense, since there's loss of information we're assuming, and particularly because some the drug molecules may be much smaller and loss of information may be significant. So that. Grant tells you that, oh yes, there is some kind of interaction between the random blocking, but it's actually a false match. I mean, can we have red squares which are lying outside, which is not inside a green square, something like that?
Oh, yes, many as you want. But they don't make any sense to us. It's not a page for us to speak. You can dog them together and find the use of the structure of the complex. There are no, partly, there are no structure-based techniques, which will tell you that A interacts with B. There are experimental techniques in which we do that, and there are sequence-based theoretical techniques. There are no structure-based techniques. People are doing that. One of the directions, and I don't have to worry about it, is all assessment. The one that must be successful.
How much time does it take to this is a huge data, a relatively large database you built, and you had to run your program on each pair here. How much time does it take to run your
program? We do it in low resolution, low resolution document.
What is there?
A second.
And if you did it at high resolution, how much would you have?
High resolution, it might take hours. So we use the clusters. Well, the importance of knowledge, how they specifically got, which we hold, as far as it's important for us as scientists to know how the mechanism of a lot of processes at the molecular level work. Right?
practical point of view, if I may say so, for the drug design, which is, you know, the structural details of creative interactions, and this is your starting point for structure-based drug design for the drug.
Yeah, the trials of the resolution automatic
the last one, sure. With an automatic.
So what did
you have done to
it? What did you think you need to use to determine the resolution size? And does it depend on how accurate the model is used for?
It depends how much you have confidence in the structure of the video tree. If we have experimental structures and we know that there shouldn't be much of conformation change, then we use higher resolution. If we're dealing with models with dubious accuracy, models of individual variables, then that is a major factor. We go to lower resolution. But if we go to the ultimate low resolution, then much limited. Ultimately, low resolution. When you have just a single minimum, which is the file, is useful for the proof of principle, it's not very useful from a practical point of view because of variable precision. So we go some lower resolution, which tolerates the inaccuracy, but still can give you some more information about the position, the orientation, the treatment. Okay, so far, as far as the gut feeling, you'll know it's going to be up the next 4 years. Yes?
I can see this recently, a couple of weeks ago, and it was about a document introductory. And what I had heard about it was there are different programs, different approaches, and some of them are successful, like putting limits, drawing, putting. How was my background? Is it better in one way or the other, or can they handle both?
Yeah, it was primarily designed for creating pretty. It works, and most of the 3,000 people who use it, they're using it for small eating stuff because they work in companies. I would assume that when they're in business, it still works there. But again, our own take was that you're designing primarily, developing further primarily.
Yes. Okay, 3,000 people, is there some particular success story that you, I mean, do you have a favorite success story of somebody who you consist of?
It's my own success, and who would make the best prediction to become the world champion. That's really where we dropped it from three, four, five. Now it's a separate competition, which is called Camp Ridge. Specifically designed competition for treating doctors. We had the first meeting in September, and the niece in France. That was very interesting. We'll see how it will go through. There is a number of publications which I know of, which describe their uses for treating and works. Some of the first names in our lab, most of them other labs.
Okay, let's thank our speaker. Really, that is quite a testimony when you do so well in a competition that they immediately decide you don't need to have any more of these competitions anymore. So that's good. Okay. So we'd like to thank all of you for coming.
Okay. Any other questions? Or
we'd
like to
run?
Okay. Well, we have another tag team. Now we're a tag team of three people giving some presentation about closing databases. Maybe you guys better come up and get it instead of your hardware now.
Run away.
You have to run. He had to run at 1:30. So, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Let me just move it.
need power? Or power here.
Not long enough. Okay. You brought the power cord, right?
Yes, it's my power cord. You see.
Bring this computer here. Close. I can leave it. Give you the computer set. What is that?
No, I suspect our outside of
Here you go.
Actually, just one thing while Lily is running away. I guess what he needs is, of course, AMS 691. That is sort of an introduction to in protein structures and modeling and things like that. So, those of you who would like this kind of stuff, that may be a good place to go.
Okay. Let me talk here.
Evidence of the top machine is turned on. You've never used one of these, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
This you think this is on? Okay, how do we make this read?
Does anybody who hasn't used one of these?
Yeah, here you go. Okay, it's making noise.
It's not supposed to
make noise. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. That's fine.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, now I think it's warm enough.
Okay.
I think you're trying to tell me.
Now that the speaker's done, any questions or any comments about protein toxins would you try to say in front of this or anything like that?
Yeah.
I saw some light here. Yeah.
Right?
No, 2,500 or more of probably research interest. And What it is, is why they get feedback from these people about how successful some of them are, because they have, you know, obviously the intellectual property concerns and stuff like this. But my assumption is that if you've got that large user community, it's really easy to solve the problems you care about, and it's, you know, important part of the pipeline.
Which one do you
Well, one thing that I kind of like about this bucket is a little thing. If I were thinking about docking proteins, I think of this as a truly geometric problem. And this geometry is hard. Geometry is messy and all this kind of stuff. And what I kind of impressed by is the engineering way that he sort of dismissed a lot of this. He just discretized everything. So instead of having this three-dimensional thing that he three-dimensional complicated thing, he had a three-dimensional matrix, basically, a grid of cells that were on and off. And, you know, he could do things with that grid that would involve a lot less technology than him involved, particularly, you know, real 3D structures. Mm-hmm. And was able to get something interesting from it. Okay, go.
Anyone
has
a point?
No point.
So first, we three will talk about the protein database.
This never has happened with my transparency. It's all semester. Transparency has worked reliably. By the way. Yeah, okay, that is good. That's good. No, you're right. What? They do, but there's only an app for the part that is slid over. I don't check to see whether, you know. Some one out of two people who have bad things happen to get away with it.
So we will talk about the protein database. So I will talk about SwitchBot, and then Yongpeng will talk about BDB database, and then Fang will show a program to show a protein structure, and lastly I'll talk about the computer-based drug design.
Yeah,
okay.
Can you read it on your screen
right now? Yeah,
I don't see it. You have to apply
for 400 more. So, basically, SwitchPot is just analyze the protein sequence database. So, what's installed in this database is really just sequence. So, it's from like protein sequence number 1 to number 400. There's no structural data in there. And this database is developed in Swift, so it's called SwitchPot. SwitchPot means the protein logic database. And right now it's maintained in Europe by AMBO. So for this database, what's useful? You think it's just a sequence, it's not the useful information. But in fact, for each of the proteins in this database, it has all related, like reference, related disease. So you can find a lot of useful information in this database.
So the key word here is annotated, as opposed to gen-bound, right?
Yeah. Okay, so next I will show you the protein. It's called rhodopsin. It's what's the most abundant protein in your eyes. So this is the SwitchPot file. So in this file, what you can see is obvious. You can see it will show you the entry names, the primary accessing number. So this is what SwitchPot gives. And what's useful information here is that the reference. So you can find all the related reference for this protein if you are interested. It has, in fact, I only copied just one. It has like more than 50 reference. And next, it will show you what's the function of the protein, what's the subcellular locations, and what's the different disease if this protein is mutated or is not functioning. And the last is also related database, like this is the rhodopsin mutation database, and also other gene mutation database. And then it will show you keywords, so it's easy for the search. And then what's the features? It shows the secondary structure. And here is the extracellular domain, and this is the transmembrane domain. Between 37 radius and 61 radius.
What does that mean, extracellular?
Yeah, because this is a membrane protein, so it's part of it's stuck in the cell membranes. So part of the protein is the membrane, and the other part goes without the membrane. So this to tell you, it's 1 to 36. It's out of membrane, and 37.61 is in the membrane. And also there is a lot of information here. It's a big file, it's close to like 600 kilobytes, even this is a text file. And then it shows you what's the modification of this protein. Like if it's carbon hydrated or it's a lipid modification of this protein. And the last part is just the sequence from 1 to, I think for this protein, 3048. So this is basically this one. So for this database, what's the claim? The AMBO claim this database has the 4 criteria. I mean, the advantage of this database, the first is has the 4 allocations. So all the interest, all the disease, everything is in there. And second, what they claim good for this database that it has a minimal redundancy. Because usually for genes, you have one point of different mutation, everything. But they incorporate all this information into just one file. So you can always find related files just in this database. And also if it's integration with other databases, then from this database you can find other information for other databases like genomes or other useful PDB databases. And finally, the documentation is very good, it's very straightforward. And next is about the PDB data bank. PDB just stands for protein data bank. And this PDB, in fact, originally it's in Brookhaven National Laboratory here. And right now it's maintained by this Rutgers, San Diego Supercomputer Center and the National Institute of Standards. And as Professor Wax already showed, this database increased like exponential. But compared to the sequence people already sequenced, it's almost nothing. And what's shown here is a useful link. You can find all this related information. And what next is Yang-Pung will show you about the PDB database.
Hello everyone, I will demonstrate how to use the PDB database. This is the homepage of PDB, and you can search use the Google, use the keyword PDB, and the first entry of the result is this website. So we can search a problem, either entering PDB ID or keyword. PDB ID is for character alpha numeric identifier, which represents a structure in PDB database. So for example, we can enter a 1F88 and click this. We have two entries. The first thing is what we are looking for. Here is the summary information of this problem.
Is the whole database on your laptop or no?
The other is Okata and the experiment method is XV fraction and it is classified as a sigmoid poison. Following is the primary citation of the structure of this poison. And it is the position data is given 29,000 and released. And the following information is the chemical detail information. Here we can view the structure of this protein.
We can view the structure in two first your image, images, and the second option is the actual 3D display. First, let's look at the still image. Here is the leading model. Here is the cylinder model.
What are the color of the cylinders?
Just a
difference. The color actually of the change of the colors. So if you know that when I go there, when it's actually really close to each other, you have to go all the way from that color to the screen. Actually, the distinction was you can get in the same color, sometimes you get blue gloss, and then you go molecule. Which secures the last of all.
Are the colors like basically the gene is of like what color are they starting to do?
No, in that so far I'll show you, we can change the color as we want. So just use it to distinguish.
Yeah, distinguish different pages.
Okay, but you're saying basically the way this is done is on an ad hoc basis, you go and you color your protein to make how you want it.
Yeah.
It's not a question of color it in a way that it shades from left to right.
So there's some people doing this, like they said, the technique chart is red, or fuzz chart is red. Some people do this, but usually it's random.
Now we can also view the structure using interactive 3D display. Here's some options. At the end of my talk, I will display the structure using VRML and function. You will display the 3D structure using RESMO. Here is the data, and we can download the structure data from here. There's two formats. First is PDB and the second is MMC. MMC is the relatively new file format. We can either download the complete information with coordinates, or we can just download the header. There's no coordinate information in the header. Complete information, really very huge.
So this is a protein structure now.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the protein structure.
Protein structure, yeah. The complete information.
This is sort of different. There's really coordinates for different atoms at the bottom.
So are they talking the coordinates of the atoms, or are they talking the coordinates of the amino acids?
Those
are atoms, yeah.
So you can see, why you see the real protein particular, so the screen splashing is all atoms, the carbon.
Now would it be easy to say sort of which atoms are part of this amino acid? Or
yes, it will tell you. The whole thing part tells you.
Here's the structure and neighbors.
Each of the five links will be their reference to other websites. And each link depends on a method to find the 3D structure homology to the portion we are currently exploring.
It's like
so those are folding programs that like, you have your current structure here, and those are threading programs.
Yeah.
Right, and that sort of gives you your current structure and your new protein. How do you thread it? Or not?
Yeah, it's a homology structure. They show the simple family. So then the first one is a super family structure. So it's a homology for threading.
This is a different method. The common use method to find the 3D structure homology. Because each method makes different assumptions, so the results of different methods may be different. Here's the geometry. There's 2 weeks to see to view the geometry. One is the keyboard, another is the graphical, and from the media, the runners pick up this. Here is the other sources of this protein. Following is the detailed information of this protein. And then to turn the chain A and chain B, we can download the chain in this command. Here is the information of chain A and chain B. This is the secondary structure of the chain. So that's all. It's very easy to use, even if you have no biological background. Next, I will show here is VIM viewer, and you can use this viewer to see the 3D information of this protein. Here is the whole picture of this protein, and we can zoom in and zoom out. We can rotate to see this structure from different view, and we can also...
This is not just the backbone, then. This has these side chains here. It has everything.
Yeah.
So this software is great for the P5.
Yes, yeah.
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 The P5 is great for
the The PDB file has different formats. This format is specifically for the VIML viewer. So we can locate a specific position in this protein. For example, here we can click here, and we can see the detailed information. But this tool is not good enough because it just let us to see the 3D cell structure, and we cannot manipulate, we cannot change the color, change the display. And the function that will show us a more powerful tool. Okay, that's it.
I'm going to introduce a software named Web Lab Viewer. Web Lab Viewer is a molecular visualization software developed by MSI Molecular Simulation Corporation. It is product of a Web Lab environment. But right now, when I check website, I found the MSI has been bought by another Japan company, so it's renamed by someone. So this tool is used to create and visualize 3D three-dimensional molecular structure. You can also use this tool to analyze the chemical features and create reports and presentations because it's a very powerful visualization tool. So I list all the supported file formats supported by the Web Lab Viewer. The most two important file formats are one is DS Viewer. This is a standard file format of this tool. Another important file format is PDB, Protein PDB file format. You can also use this tool to, so when you import a file from outside, this tool can automatically convert 2D sketches to a 3D data structure. And you can also use this very critical unit cells when you import the files. When you import the PDE files, you can automatically assign secondary structure. And you can also automatically add hydrogens upon import and calculate charges on import. So it has very extended. The output file formats provided by this tool includes the DS Viewer, full pattern PDB, and the VRML file format, which Wang just showed to us. So you can also output the file formats in JPG and BitMax. It's a universal file format used in other platforms. Yeah, you can transform. Yeah. When you read in a PDB file, and you can convert it to like a WR file, which can be read in by like a personal console player on with a VLML. Basically, this tool is developed by OpenGL graphics library. They say they use hardware-enabled serial 3D visualization, so I think maybe they refer to like texture mapping mechanism, something like that. You can use tools from line, stick, ball, and stick, and something, some other display styles to emphasize and pick up what you want to do. For perking, you can choose display styles in, with among C alpha, ribbon, tube, and schematic. You can even choose or either orthographic view or perspective view to build the whole molecular. The last part, they said it can add light and path shading and direction options to increase the reality of the molecular. One important part of the feature of the tool is that you can edit and create the molecular by yourself. With sketch tools, you can draw atoms, and with ring tools, you can create rings of any size, like bends and rings. And with chain tools, you can create atom chains of any length. And if you want to, you can annotate your objects with annotation tools. And that is you bind a text onto an object in the bit.
Are people working with individual atoms here, or are individuals working like say entire amino acids?
Sorry?
But are you only drawing individual atoms?
Oh no, they draw the whole molecular. But the molecular contains a lot of atoms. So maybe they build the whole molecular from every atom and connect them with bonds and then after that. Oh, you say, can I just say that I want to draw some kind of animation and they will draw it automatically, right? Right now, I think they have some basic library you can import, so you can borrow from other library. I saw some a set of amino acid files already, they have already put on the web, so I think you can download from web and then import from that file, so you don't need to create from every atom. With this tool, you can do some extra computations. Such as you can calculate the number of atoms and calculate molecular weight and volume and the partial charges. You can even measure the distance between two atoms and the diagonal angles between any two atoms, any bonds. You can even compute the surface and protein secondary structure from the molecular. There are three ways to access data in these tools. First of all, you can use the three-dimensional window to build the objects. Another window is called a hierarchy window because the molecular is organized in a hierarchy structure. For every molecular, it contains atoms and bonds. for every protein in my contents change, which my contents also residues and a lot of atoms. So you can use this hierarchy window with a tree-like organization to pick up the object you want. And the last window is a data table window. It actually contains is a spreadsheet view of all elements and contains all their attributes. I think actually the display window reads from the data table window and then shows the attributes on the interface. You can even sort the elements in the data table window based on their names or all kinds of attributes. The last part is integration. It's totally compatible with Word or PowerPoint. You can output very easy, output the files, and then come up with your presentation or reports. So next, I will show you So this is the structure of aspirin. You can choose like a boss stick to view the whole structure. And this is already created by someone else. So as I have said, there is a big database of all like amino acids database you can borrow from them and then create your own molecular.
Why would this be better run than one of those ribbon drawings or a stencil? Is it purely a question of taste, or is there some reason why one representation is better?
I think that depends on what you want to see. Because if someone wants to see the like ribbons between two atoms, and it's kind of because this is a simple structure with a big large structure, you may not have. You may not be able to pick out what you want. So you can either choose the display style you want to emphasize the features of the molecular. This is DNA. So for DNA structure, if you want to see the helix, you can pick out like a display styles to emphasize the helix of the structure. So basically the atoms attributes are already stored in the database, so you just define a kind of display style that they can such as if they color the like labels with white to based on some setups. You can also change the setups. This is protein introduced by Wang just now. So for protein, you can choose like ribbons to show.
Wait, so is this program figuring out the secondary structure?
Yes, I can show you.
It's just saying,
give me,
show me the
helix
in the thread.
It's
not
saying,
find me the
helix. So actually, it's not like colored by secondary structure. So you can choose you can choose like colored by amino acid strands or molecular or cells or something else. So yeah. And finally, I will show you. So basically, this is a HIV epic size of HIV epic size. Of course, you can edit the every atoms and bonds and. Like annotations and measure the angles between any two atoms. That's like something like that.
planning the experimentation test. So how to place all this coding docking and all this program for how to do the graphing. So the last pictures found already showed you that I have coding. And the people want to do the drug, all the pharmaceutical companies want to do is find a small molecule which can bind to that HY protein to inhibit it infecting your cell. So what this is called structure-based drug design and protein docking. So this is a de novo design. So we will try to find a small molecule which can bind to the protein, because usually for peptide protein it's not a good drug candidate because it's easy to digest in your body. So usually all these drugs you it's on the market usually like 99% all small molecules. And what we're trying to find
is... what's the biggest small molecule?
To usually it's like maybe like 200 atoms, maybe more than that. So you can see when you have a drug with a certain structure, you can count the molecule. It's very small, it's maybe only 4 amino acid size. So because the bigger ones, like when you take it in your body, usually it's easy to digest, obviously. But they have some protein drugs too. So what's like that Gram program, they show this protein docking, it's somewhat different than protein ligand docking. Because protein ligand docking, we need much more accurate information. Because any modification can change this docking, and it will have a big effect in your drug. And this structure-based drug design is very powerful to try to find a new drug candidate. So the traditional drug design that's based on trial and error. So when you have an aspirin, what you want to do is just modify this aspirin to test if they have bad effect. The best example for the traditional drug design is ampicillin. Because like almost 100 years ago when they first had the ampicillin, you just need 10 units. But right now it may be thousands of units, millions of units. But during these 100 years, people are just trying to modify this ampicillin. They have different like antibodies. But basically the whole cost structure is just ampicillin. Because the bacteria becomes more powerful, more resistant to the drug. So you just need to modify these small molecules. So all these companies doing this are different like ampicillin devices and on the market. And for the structure-based drug design, or computational-based drug design, first they have the crystal structure you really need for NMR structure. Or you can do a homology modeling to get a protein structure. And second is based on this geometry of the protein, we're trying to find a small, like small ligand to dock into that binding site. And this is very accurate because any small difference will make a big difference in your life. And then we have usually have like maybe 1,000 or 100 candidates. Then they do a HTS called high throughput screening to do an initial system to try maybe narrow down to 100 or 1,000. Then they will do the last part is a clinical test. This is a long part. It takes like 5 years because I fixed my